Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You are now listening to the Calcio Corner podcast with your host, Raffaele.
What's good? This is indeed the Calcio Corner podcast, where we cover all corners of Italian football and more. My name is Raffaele. Thank you for taking the time to listen to this, the 31st episode of the podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, and Audioboom. You can follow my personal Twitter account. It is at Italiano Calcio. You can also follow the Twitter account for this podcast. It is at the Calcio Corner. So we will start off this 31st episode of the podcast by talking about the recent Serie A action this past weekend, round 17. And as always, we will use the good, the bad, and the ugly. Let's start with the good from this weekend. Milan, they bounced back from their midweek loss against Juventus by defeating Torino 2-0. Did Milan turn in like a totally dominant performance? No, but they got the job done. And in the end, they collected the 3 points, and that's what's most important. They never really allowed Torino to feel like they were in this game. It never felt like one of those games that you were worried that Milan might drop points or lose this game, even though it wasn't like a totally dominant performance, but they got the job done 2-0. So good for Milan. As I said, you know, coming off their first loss in what seems like forever. So, you know, I was curious coming into this game to see how would they bounce back from that loss against Juve, and they did just fine. One negative that came out of this game for Milan was Sandro Tonali. He had to leave in the second half with an injury. He had to leave actually on a stretcher. He wasn't able to walk off on his own. So that certainly was disappointing to see for Sandro Tonali. You know, hopefully, obviously, he is fine. After that injury, Stefano Pioli, he pushed Davide Calabria into the midfield where he had played. He actually started in midfield against Juventus because they were, you know, kind of short a few players due to COVID and whatnot. And he actually did a really good job in that game against Juve in the midfield. And once Pioli pushed him into the midfield after the Tonali injury, he played really well as well this time out too. So, you know, Pioli might have, you know, kind of found something there. And, you know, we'll see if he ends up deploying Calabria in that role more often going forward. Certainly, again, it's been a pleasant surprise for Milan over these past two games, discovering that, you know, Calabria is not a half bad player in the midfield and certainly someone that could play in that role need be. Also, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, he made his return, albeit just coming on for the final few minutes, but certainly another good for Milan in this game, seeing him come back. This was Zlatan's first appearance since November 22nd. It's kind of crazy to think that Milan have looked so good and they've been such a good team and a strong side this season. They've actually done it in more games than not without Zlatan, so kudos to them, but I'm sure obviously, you know, the Milan players, Stefano Pioli, the Rossoneri fans, they're all super happy to have Zlatan back. So definitely that's a good. But again, Milan win in the end, not a convincing win, a dominant win, I should say. But I really, as I said, I really wanted to see how they would bounce back from that Juve loss. They get the win. They maintain first place in Serie A. But not only that, they actually end up increasing their lead overall because Inter Roma drew 2-2 at the Olimpico, which I'll talk about a little bit later. So Milan now lead Inter by 3 points, and their lead over Roma has grown to 6. So certainly a great weekend for Milan, increasing their lead in Serie A, and a nice way to bounce back after that loss to Juve. I fully expected Milan to win this game, but I was a little disappointed by Torino's performance. They had been playing slightly better. They've been kind of improving a little bit over these past few games under Marco Giampaolo, and I kind of wanted to see how they would fare against obviously a much tougher opponent like Milan. I know they drew against Napoli right before the holiday break. And so again, that was kind of one of those games that was part of this improved performance from Torino. So I really wanted to see how would they look against a first place Milan side, but they really kind of disappointed. They were a very lackluster side. I know they certainly have work to do. They aren't at Milan's level yet. They're far from that Torino, but I was just looking to see a little bit of a better performance from them and see if they really are fully on that track to improving this team, but perhaps I was a little ahead of myself with their improvement. Atalanta, they rolled right over Benevento 4-1. That was actually the first game of the weekend. I said it on Twitter that Atalanta, they're starting to really click now, and we know just how dangerous of a side they can be and what happens when they're playing like this. And I know if you were someone who felt the team would struggle without Papu Gomez, then you really haven't been following this team that closely over the past two seasons. I'm not discrediting Papu Gomez. We know he's a superb talent. He has the ability to change a game, dictate a game, control a game. And he's been a huge role and reason why Atalanta have been successful over the past few seasons. But again, this team goes way deeper than just him. We all know Duvan Zapata is a great striker in this league, one of the best strikers in Serie A and one of the better ones in Europe. Luis Muriel has turned into like a stud player under Gasperini. Ilicic, when he's healthy, which he is now, he's playing outstanding. He had a superb goal in this game against Benevento. So there's such a deep team, a well-coached team by Gasperini. And again, Benevento is not a pushover team as we've seen in Serie A. They've played tough against some of the big teams in Italy. They had that draw against Juventus a few weeks ago. So they are not a pushover team. So anytime, you know, you're able to beat them 4-1, it certainly is going to raise some eyes. So kudos to Atalanta. And I know when the news first broke in Italy that Papu Gomez wanted to leave, I had mentioned on this podcast, would you rather have Papu Gomez or Gasperini if you're an Atalanta fan? Both, you know, beloved figures by the Atalanta fans. And, you know, I joked about if, you know, one of them has to leave, who would you rather see leave? Who would you rather keep? But in the end, I would certainly keep Gasperini, the coach. For me, it's a no-brainer. If you have a really good coach like Gasperini, he's the guy you got to keep. His ability to get the most out of his players goes beyond just having that one singular talent like a Papu Gomez. Coaches, they make all the difference in the world. Just look at Verona. Sure, they have some talented players. They're not a team deprived of talent, but they're not a team also flourishing with an abundance of talent. But they're doing such a good job. They're a top half team in Serie A. They had a great season last season, finishing in the top 10 as well. They're getting some positive results against some of the biggest clubs in Italy this season. And a big reason why is obviously Ivan Juric, their coach. So coaches can certainly make a significant difference on a team if it's the right fit. And Gasperini is at the right place with Atalanta. So he deserves a lot of credit as well. Three goods for me came out of that Udinese-Napoli game, which I will talk about a little bit later, some of the bads that came out of that game for sure. But one of the goods was Kevin Lasagna. He put in a really good performance for Udinese. He scored the lone goal for them. Could have had another goal a little bit later on in the game, but he turned in a really good performance. Certainly, you know, he's capable of having those type of performances, and you just want to see him put those together more consistently because he could be a good striker, a more consistent striker, but he doesn't do it consistently enough. But I thought he put in a really good performance against Napoli in this one. Alex Meret, he also deserves a shout out. He had a really good game in goal for Napoli, and it's performances like this is why I advocate for him on Twitter to be the clear number one for Napoli. Don't have these moments where you flip-flop between him and David Ospina, especially when you saw what Ospina did towards the end of the midweek game against Spezia, which I talked about at length a little bit on the previous episode of the podcast. I'll talk about, you know, Napoli's defensive struggles a little bit later, but if it weren't for Moret and the way he played in this game, I think not only do Napoli maybe not win this game, I think they end up losing this game. I don't even think a draw is possible if it wasn't for the performance Moret turned in. So he certainly was one of the goods and the standouts from this previous round in Serie A. So credit to Moret. And the other good from this game was Bakayoko. He scored the late game winner on a nice header, and that was just a massive goal for Napoli. And you could kind of see it on the Napoli players' faces, including Bakayoko, after he scored that game. This was not a game that they could have afforded to even tie against Udinese. I know they were tied 1-1 late, but a draw wasn't even going to be enough for them, given that they did just lose to Spezia midweek. They did kind of get outplayed a bit, Napoli. They certainly did not play like they deserved to win. It was an unfortunate result for Udinese, but a massive goal for Bakayoko. And one that helps kind of steady the ship in Naples, and a win that helps them to kind of close that gap in pursuit of the top four when you considered, as I mentioned, Inter and Roma drawn earlier today. So massive goal for Bakayoko. Him and Alex Meret, certainly the standouts for me in that Napoli game. In their, you know, big 2-1 win on that late winner over Udinese. All right, some more good from this round. Got to give props to Genoa and Davide Ballardini. Genoa beat Bologna 2-0, and now they've picked up 7 points over their last four games. They had earned 7 points in the first 13 games combined, so they've certainly turned the things around a bit at Genoa. So kudos to them as they fight off, or try to fight off relegation, I should say. They do have some reinforcements on the way. They are all set to sign former Roma midfielder Kevin Strootman on loan until the end of the season. So he'll kind of help provide some stability in the middle of the field for Genoa. So that's a good addition for them as they continue this little turnaround. Also, no surprise, Lazio, they beat Parma. But, you know, it was good to see that they were able to beat a team, albeit not obviously a good team, a team that is struggling in Parma, but to beat them without Ciro Immobile really having a good game. He did not score in this game as Lazio won 2-0. They got goals from Luis Alberto, who is just, obviously we know he's a hell of a player, probably doesn't get the full credit and praise that he deserves. Felipe Caicedo, he added the other goal. He's really blossoming into a really good striker as well to go along with Ciro Immobile at Lazio. So good win for them again without having Immobile put in one of his better performances. Although I got to give a little credit for Parma, they did look a little bit better in this game and a little bit more organized in what was Roberto D'Aversa's first game back in charge as he replaced Fabio Liverani earlier this week. Obviously, D'Aversa is very familiar with being at Parma. He was their coach last season. But I would say they looked a little bit more organized in their first game under D'Aversa this season. So much good to go around this final in this most recent round of Serie A. So my final one goes out to Verona's Federico Di Marco, the former Inter youth product. He's really blossomed over these past few seasons. He spent some time at Parma. Currently, he's at Verona. He scored a goal in Verona's 2-1 win over Crotone as Verona keep their little run of positive results going as they continue to make their, albeit perhaps a bit of a long shot, but their push to try to finish in a Europa League spot. He just put in a really good performance, did Federico Di Marco. And I don't think it's crazy to talk about him perhaps earning a spot on Italy's Euro squad this summer. He and Faroni, what a great combination of wingbacks for Ivan Juric at Verona, and certainly two key pieces and two key reasons why Verona have been so good this season. Moving on to the bad from this past weekend, I got to put Antonio Conte and Inter as some of my bads. Now, they did draw against a very good Roma side at the Olimpico. And overall, if you just take it at face value, it's not a bad result drawn against a really good, a really strong Roma side in Rome. However, there's three reasons why I actually think it was a bad result in the end for Inter. One, Inter came out on fire in the second half after what was somewhat of a flat first half for them. Roma kind of dropped the ball a little bit in the second half, even though they had a 1-0 lead. Inter ended up taking a 2-1 lead. They had that lead with just 5 minutes to go, but to concede a late equalizer to Roma, it was Gianluca Mancini, the center back, who equalized the game for Roma. To blow that game with just a few minutes left when you're Inter, a side that, you know, Conte prides himself on and being an organized side, a side that's prepared to handle these situations. And for them to drop the ball, you know, you had those 3 big points in the bag. You were going to stay even with Milan, just remain 1 point behind them. You would have ended up increasing your lead over Roma, who's right now the closest team behind you. You could have increased that lead to 6 points. Instead, they maintain status quo with Roma in terms of their deficit behind them, but they drop points. They fall 2 points further behind Milan, as I mentioned earlier. Second reason why this was a bad result for Inter. As I started, a draw against Roma in Rome is not a bad result, but when it comes off of a bad loss against Sampdoria midweek that Inter had, this draw looks even worse. Inter almost, you know, kind of backed themselves into a corner where a draw really wouldn't be enough for them. After losing to Sampdoria, they almost put themselves in a position where you had to come win and get 3 points, especially after they saw Milan win on Saturday. But again, dropping the ball with just a few minutes left. Third reason why this was a bad loss, and this one is a bit more on Antonio Conte. I couldn't understand why he took Hakimi off, in like the 84th, 85th minute, whatever that was, to bring on Kolarov. Hakimi was having a really good game. He scored a wonderful goal. If he didn't see it, definitely look that up. He's one of the best players, you know, Inter have. He's such a wonderful talent. I said it when they signed him. I think this was probably the best signing of the summer, hands down, not just in Italy. I think it's going to be one of the best signings across Europe from this previous summer mercato. But he's the type of player you kind of want out there with a late lead. He's a player that has the legs, has the ability to run up and down the field, to, you know, if Inter are able to get a little break forward and try to hold the ball in their half of the field, he could do that. He's also able to get back should Roma have a counterattack going late in the game. So I didn't understand why Conte took him off. So again, when you look at this draw for Inter, again, if you think big picture, drawing against Roma at the Olimpico is not a horrible result. But with those few things I laid out there, it kind of turned out to be a worse result than perhaps it looks on paper. From a Roma perspective, I think anytime you find a late equalizer the way they did, you kind of have to be happy to accept the draw. They played a bit better in the first half. They really kind of dropped the ball in the second half, as I mentioned. Did they get outplayed to the point where they shouldn't have drawn this game? No, I think a draw is the most fair result if you watch that game. And a little bit of a random occurrence that I thought was interesting from this game. You had Romelu Lukaku and Edin Dzeko. We know two of the best strikers in Italy, two of the better strikers in all of Europe. Four goals were scored in this game between the two sides. None of them were scored by Lukaku and Dzeko, interestingly enough. Two were scored by center back Skriniar and Gianluca Mancini. Another by Hakimi, who applies his trade as a wing back. And the other was by midfielder Lorenzo Pellegrini. Just a random thought that I found interesting here again. Big game. You know, one of the big, you know, marquee headlines coming into this game is Lukaku versus Dzeko, two of the best strikers. You ended up having four goals. Neither of them able to score any of those goals. Another bad, Rahmani finally got his first start for Napoli in defense. He really hasn't played much at all this season since coming over from Verona over the summer. And he had a really poor game in this game. It was his mistake that led to that Kevin Lasagna goal I talked about before that allowed Udinese to tie the score at 1-1. It was his shaky defense all game that almost made you think Udinese were going to win this game. We saw Kostas Manolas. He had to leave early with an injury. So now you ended up having Rahmani paired with Maksimovic, who he himself has been very shaky this season. So essentially Gattuso had his third and fourth option at center back playing for the majority of this game. So certainly Napoli fans were a little bit on edge watching this game. And as I mentioned, Meret turned in a great performance and one that they needed him to step up big to give him this win. As I mentioned, I think that they might have lost this game, forget drawing it. I think they would have lost if he didn't put in a great performance that he did. Rahmani, he's trying to prove that he should be playing more. He's barely seen the field at Napoli, but this is not the type of performance that's going to help make that argument. Although perhaps, you know, I know Koulibaly is on the mend. He's coming back. He was available off the bench. He did not play, but we'll have to see what happens with Manolas, who had to leave with an injury. But, you know, Gattuso could be forced into a situation where he has to play Rahmani more than he wants. But after this performance, you certainly can't trust him or feel comfortable playing him. Overall, Napoli did not play a very clean game by any means. Honestly, Udinese were lucky. They were unlucky to lose this game. They should have certainly earned a draw. If not, they played well enough to beat Napoli. They did a good job at exposing Napoli defensively and took advantage of that Rahmani and Maksimovic pairing. They need Koulibaly back, as I mentioned. But Gattuso ended up keeping him on the bench, even though he was available. Diego Demme, he did come on for the final few minutes in the midfield. He's another player that Napoli have really been missing, so I'm sure Napoli fans were happy to see him come back the same way Milan fans were happy to see Zlatan come back. So, you know, Napoli are starting to get some of their injured players back, and we'll see if that could help them kind of click and get things going back again in Naples. One more bad from this weekend, injury bug that hit Juventus in their game against Sassuolo. Weston McKennie, Paulo Dybala had to leave in the first half with injuries. As I'm recording this, we don't know the extent of those injuries. They're going to undergo testing in the coming days. Now, Juve ended up winning 3-1 over Sassuolo, but if you actually watch that game, if you look at that scoreline, you may think Juve won, you know, a nice easy game considering Sassuolo were down a man and all, but to be honest with you, Sassuolo played really hard. They fought till the very end despite being down a man. Cristiano Ronaldo added a very late goal at the end to make it 3-1. But when that game was 2-1 with a few minutes left, Sassuolo, despite being down a man, they were really fighting hard and pushing. They ended up falling behind 1-0, but then they got an equalizer from De Frel. Sassuolo fought really hard, so Juve kind of also deserved to be on my bad list. Again, they got the win, 3 points, that's what's most important. They closed the gap a little behind Roma, they closed the gap behind Inter. They don't drop any points to Milan. A win's a win, 3 points to 3 points, they're all equal. Whether you win them great, whether you win them sloppy, whatever the case may be. But Juve, they've looked good, right, since the new year. They had that big win against Milan 3-1. But then, again, Sassuolo are a good, solid team, a tricky team, a well-organized, a good playing team. But you go down, Sassuolo go down a man, so Juve go up a man. and you're kind of expecting, considering the form Juve been in a little bit recently, that we're starting to see Juve change a little bit. They're starting to click and get back to their old ways. But to kind of win a very unconvincing 3-1 win over Sassuolo wasn't the best performance from Juve, certainly leaving you more question marks than answers. But again, in the end, they got 3 points. Moving on to the ugly from this past weekend, João Pedro and Cagliari, they unfortunately get the honor of landing here. Cagliari lose 1-0 against Fiorentina. They've now lost 4 games in a row, Cagliari I'm talking of, and they are winless over their last 10 league games. That's a really bad run. It's the worst in Serie A currently going. They have a better team than that, than certainly losing, I should say winless over 10 games. They have a very competent coach in Eusebio Di Francesco. So this has really just been a horrible run they're on. One reason why I singled out João Pedro is because, you know, he's arguably been their best player over the past season plus. We know the great scoring season he had last year. He's been doing good this season for Cagliari. He had a penalty right before halftime when the game was still tied 0-0. Your team's really struggling, right? You have a penalty, a chance to give your team the lead heading into the half. It could have helped propel your side into, you know, a good smooth second half, maybe get a win against Fiorentina in Florence. João Pedro ends up missing the penalty. It's saved. So tough blow by Cagliari, and they kind of never recovered. Got to give Fiorentina and Prandelli credit. This side has been playing a little bit better of late. They're starting to figure it out since Prandelli's taken over. Before, besides those first 2 games under Prandelli, they've certainly improved of late. But I thought this might have been a chance for Cagliari to kind of end this winless drought at 9, but instead it pushes to 10. You just wonder how much longer Di Francesco is going to be able to keep that job at Cagliari. Will they make that switch sooner rather than later? Perhaps. I'm going to talk about that a little bit later on the podcast. But again, Cagliari pushing their winless streak to 10. João Pedro missing a big penalty that could have helped turn things around for Cagliari in the first half. They end up landing on my ugly for this past weekend. All right, now on to buy it or sell it to cover some of the storylines and rumors that have been dominating the Italian media and the world of football. Let's get right into it. Number one, buy it or sell it, Benevento would be a good landing spot for Brian Reynolds before joining Juventus over the summer. I will buy this one. So for those not too sure, up to date on the discussion surrounding Brian Reynolds, Juventus, they would like to sign FC Dallas's Brian Reynolds. He's a right wing back. He's drawn a lot of interest from some of the other big clubs in Europe, including Roma. They've been really hard in their pursuit for the FC Dallas defender. Problem is for Juventus, they can't sign him because he is an American, and Juve do not have any more available non-EU spots. If you recall when they were trying to pursue Luis Suarez over the summer, there was that whole debacle with the, you know, the passport test and the legitimacy of that test where he fed answers. That's not what we're talking about here, but they don't have a non-EU spot available on the roster, but they really want Reynolds. So what they're going to do is he's going to end up joining Benevento in January should this deal be complete from FC Dallas. Then Juventus would have the rights to him come the summer when he would likely move over to join Juve, or Juve will have their option as to where they're going to place him if they don't want him on the roster for the next season, whatever the case may be. But obviously, you know, a very creative way for Juventus to get around not having that non-EU spot to send them out to Benevento. Benevento certainly will benefit from this because, you know, he will help provide some depth at that wingback position. And I think it's, you know, it's a good landing spot for the American. Benevento, they like to play a very offensive style of play, as we know. Pippo Inzaghi likes his fullbacks to come forward and get involved in the offensive phase of the game. So it certainly plays into Reynolds' style of play. And it's a system that will allow him to play comfortably and get involved and really try to showcase his talent for being such a young player. A player on Benevento, Gaetano Laetitia, he's been really outstanding so far for Benevento, playing as that right back, which is the side of the field that Brian Reynolds primarily plays on. I haven't seen too much of Reynolds play, so I'm not sure if he's a player that could switch over to the left side, assuming that Pippo Inzaghi wants to stay loyal to Laetitia. And you can't blame him for doing that because Laetitia has been outstanding this season, as I said. But again, Reynolds will provide some depth for Pippo Inzaghi as that team continues to battle to try to stay in the top 10. Again, Reynolds could move over to the left side because he has a much more better chance at maybe cracking the starting lineup on that side of the field. We've kind of seen Juve do this in the past, right? They love stockpiling young talent. Some of it they'll keep on their roster, but some they'll loan out to other teams. Or, you know, they'll close deals with teams where they have, you know, the option to buy the player in the future, whatever the case may be. They love collecting all this talent. Do they always pan out? No, we've seen Juve sign several young players over the past few seasons that never really panned out. But, it, you know, it's not a bad approach that they have. They like to cast this wide net, and, you know, they kind of see what sticks. So, again, they're going after Reynolds. They're going to work Benevento in a deal so that they could secure the rights to him in the future for not having that 9U spot. They're trying to close the deal with Genoa for Nicola Rovella, another young promising player, but he will stay on loan at Genoa for the rest of the season. And then, you know, he'll come over to Juve over the summer, and they'll decide what to do with him at that point. But again, it's not a bad approach what Juve do, right? They acquire the rights of these promising young players, stick them at other clubs, leave them at other clubs on loan, kind of see how they develop over the next year or so. If they grow and progress and the club feels they're ready to bring them into the Juve ecosystem, if you will, they do so, and they see if they could help elevate their game to that next level. If their progress at the club that they're on loan at doesn't really show the maturation, they'll kind of sell them off. They'll kind of work them in other deals. Look at a player like Rolando Mandragora, what they've done with him at Juve. Let's not forget about Simone Zaza. He's another guy. Andrea Favilli is another player recently that they've kind of done this with. So it's not a bad approach. Again, I respect what Juve do. Try to acquire as much young, promising talent. All this young, promising talent doesn't always develop, but they, you know, they create a large net and they see what sticks to it and whatever the case may be. So, you know, Brian Reynolds and Nicola Rovella, these are two young players that they're looking to do the same thing with. But yeah, I definitely like Brian Reynolds going to Benevento en route to eventually getting his way to Juve. All right, number two, buy or sell it. Moise Kean should be Italy's starting striker at the Euros this summer. I'm going to sell this one. Now, obviously, a lot could change from now, as I'm recording this in early January, until the summer when the Euros will take place, hopefully. Yes, Moise Kean, he's playing outstanding for PSG at the moment. He's scoring plenty of goals. He's fully deserving of having a spot on that Italy Euro roster, and Mancini should definitely put him on the team as things currently are constituted. He is blossoming, you know, into potentially our future starting striker. Eventually, obviously, Ciro Immobile won't be there, so we're going to need a striker eventually, a new number one at that position. So he's certainly blossoming and making his case to be that future striker for Italy, that future number nine. But as things stand, I still have to give that starting job to Ciro Immobile. I know he's kind of been hit or miss when he puts on that Azzurri shirt. And, you know, it's frustrating at times because we watch him tear up Serie A when he's wearing the Lazio shirt. But, you know, he certainly has more low points when he's wearing the Italy shirt. Still, Immobile, for me, he's my starter at the Euro as things stand. He's scoring goals at a tremendous rate this season. He had that, you know, record-tying performance last season, scoring 36 goals in the league, tying Higuain's record. So he's certainly the most deserving option as of now to be Italy's starting striker come the Euro. Moise Kean, he's surrounded by talent at PSG with guys like Neymar and Mbappe and Angel Di Maria. And I'm not taking anything away from Moise Kean. I'm not saying that he's, you know, purely a product of his environment, of what he has around him at PSG, but it doesn't hurt. He scored 9 league goals right now. He has 2 more that he's added in the Champions League. So 11 goals in total. He's having a really good season. When he left Everton to join PSG, I really didn't know what to expect. I didn't even know if he'd see that much playing time, because if you remember, they have Icardi on the team. They have those other big names up front, like I just mentioned. So, you know, he's done a nice job making the most of his opportunity, and he's been getting a few starts right now for PSG, so kudos to him. Definitely deserves to be on the Italy Euro roster, no doubt about that. But as of now, I'm still committed to starting Ciro Immobile, despite the ups and downs he has in that Azzurri shirt. But he right now is the most deserving player to continue being Italy's number nine. All right, last one, number three. Eusebio Di Francesco will be the next coach fired. Unfortunately, I got to buy this one. I talked about it a little bit before. Cagliari winless over their last 10 league games, including 4 losses in a row. They are just 2 points away from the relegation zone, and I don't think anyone could have predicted this coming into the season, that Cagliari would be in this position. They came in with some lofty expectations. I'm not saying anyone picked them to finish top 6 and in a European spot, but to be 2 points away from the relegation zone 17 rounds into the season, I don't think that anyone was predicting that. Again, 10 games in a row without a win. And when you look at some of those teams that they've played in that stretch, you're telling me they couldn't find a win? I mean, they've played games against Parma. They've played games against Udinese, against Spezia. They just had this game against Fiorentina. One of those 4 opponents, certainly there should have been a win in one of those 4 games, if not 2 of them. So, yeah, I do think Di Francesco might be, you know, he might have the hottest seat right now in Italy. And he for me, is the most likely coach to be fired next. It's tough to see, you know, him struggling like this. He's such a good coach. He's such a good guy. We all really got to see the success he had in kind of launching his coaching career at Sassuolo. Remember, he helped them get their first ever promotion to Serie A back in 2013. He guided them to Europa League spot just a few seasons later. He really helped launch this, you know, Sassuolo team that we've seen since they've got that promotion under him. They've been a main fixture in Serie A. They've challenged. They've had some top six finishes. They've provided some memorable moments. They've had some great players on the team. He parlayed that success at Sassuolo into the Roma job, finishing in third place his first season there. It seemed like he was, you know, on this fast track to being this really great coach, but obviously all things didn't really work out. Ended up losing his job at Roma, went to Sampdoria, got fired. Now he's struggling at Cagliari, so certainly things not going as Di Francesco would like. Some other coaches that I think are in danger of being fired: Mihailovic is certainly not getting much out of his Bologna side right now. They're not too far behind Cagliari. They are winless over their last eight games. Mihailovic, obviously, he's such a beloved figure. We know he's had his battles with cancer, and he still managed to do a really good job with this Bologna team. He's in a tough situation. He's tough as nails. His players love him. But, you know, at the same time, you got to be fair in terms of just judging him on, you know, what he's done with Bologna. He's not getting the job done right now, so certainly I think it's fair to say his job is in jeopardy. Luca Gotti at Udinese, he also has to be a bit on thin ice. I know they put in a good performance against Napoli, but just not getting it done. A big picture, the team is really struggling. They do have a pretty good team. They have talent on that Udinese roster, more talent perhaps than what he's, you know, getting in terms of points and results. So, you know, certainly look for one of those coaches, Di Francesco, Mihailovic, and Luca Gotti, as perhaps the next coach to be fired in Italy, with perhaps Di Francesco being the most likely, given the 10 straight games without a win for Cagliari. So that will do it for the 31st episode of the Calcio Corner podcast. I hope you have enjoyed it. Once again, please subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, and Audioboom. Feel free to leave a rating and comment. That would be greatly appreciated and would help us to grow our content. And until next time, guys, ciao.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Calcio Corner podcast with your host, Raffaele. If you've enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast listening platform. We really appreciate that effort. Until next time.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's knows tough jobs call for tougher tools. The new DeWalt Elite Series power tool accessories are built to last for the pro who doesn't stop. With precision fitment, durability, and impact resistance, finishing jobs faster has never been easier. Shop the new DeWalt Elite Series at an everyday low price exclusively at Lowe's. We help, you save.